So one of the very first things I did was I presented to my mum and a group of her friends from the WI who were all in their 70s or 80s. This is the toughest audience I've ever had, Matt, and they tore me to pieces. I learned loads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Market Mentors podcast. I'm Matt Dodgson, co-founder of Market Recruitment, and we connect B2B tech and SaaS businesses with marketers to help them grow. This week, we're joined by Paul Burney. Paul is CMO at Anthropos, a connected care platform that enables intelligent remote monitoring of older people. And we're going to be talking about why marketing fundamentals matter more than anything else when you're working for a B2B tech startup. Let's be honest, it's easy to get distracted with new tools, new frameworks, new strategies, you name it. Yet you'll succeed or fail through your ability to influence revenue. And this is where fundamentals come in. Let's get into it. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Market Mentors podcast, Paul.
Hey, Matt, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. So before we get stuck into this one, I'd love to know what your relationship is with B2B tech marketing.
I've spent almost my entire career doing B2B marketing, except for a brief part doing B2B2C in the motorcycle industry a long time ago. I've done very little direct-to-consumer stuff.
Good stuff. Now, we were talking the other week about all these playbooks, these new amazing tools, but we're really kind of here to sort of strip it back, really, to talk about the fundamentals and why they're so important when you're working for a startup. But first, what attracted you to work at Anthropos in the first place?
Combination of things. The first is simple. The tech was amazing, what the technology does. The second thing is that the outcome of using the technologies was something meaningful to me. So when I first started here 5 years ago, I met the CEO, a guy who I'd worked for previously, so I had a good relationship with him already. And it took him 10 minutes to persuade me to join and to stop what I was doing, which was basically running my own marketing consultancy business. And it's because what our technology does is supports older people to stay independent in their own homes for longer. And my parents were both in their 80s when I first joined, and I could see immediately how this tech could support both my parents and me, and also give me the opportunity to do something meaningful. In marketing parlance, I felt the company's mission gave me purpose. But actually, the other thing that really attracted me was because it's someone I've worked for before who knew what I did and what I'm good at doing, you know, he basically gave me a blank sheet of paper and said, go do your thing. I think as a marketer, it doesn't get any better than somebody saying, you do what you're good at and I'll support you. And you're starting from scratch. So you know if you're successful, it's down to you.
Yeah, it's like the Holy Grail, really, I think.
It is. As is the case in every startup, you kind of stand or fall on your own 2 feet, you know. But I much prefer to be in a world of when you're judged by your own results, it is literally you that's made it happen. The other end of the scale of the marketing world, you know, kind of working in a big consumer brand where you're fighting to get another 1% market share, I think I would be completely rubbish at. It's just not me.
No. I'm trying to find that nice medium between the startup stuff, which is great, which actually you can find fairly often, but actually then combined with the tech for good, which if you speak to a lot of marketeers, they'd love to get into something like that. So, you know, it sounds like you really do have the Holy Grail there. So what stage was the company at when you joined them?
So we had created the prototype product and we'd got some initial funding and had a, if you like, a foundation customer where we were testing and learning about the product. But there was no brand, there was no go-to-market strategy, there was no sales approach. Everything else about the company had to be built from scratch. I was partly responsible for renaming the company when I joined. It was called something else. And we had a range of options to pick from. And the company's name is Anthropos, which is actually what our engineers, software engineers, called the server that they'd built the platform on.
Oh, wow.
We were originally called something else completely different.
Yeah.
But I wanted a more recognizable brand.
Yeah. So that's almost sounds like the blankest of blank sheets of paper. I mean, that really is.
Didn't even have a website, did not have any kind of corporate brand, didn't have a corporate logo, literally nothing.
Wow.
So it was doing all of that from scratch.
Yeah.
And a lot of that I've done before in other businesses, which is kind of why our CEO kind of had the confidence in me to say, go and do your thing.
Yeah, good stuff. So when we talk about marketing fundamentals then, what does that mean to you?
The thing that attracted me to marketing, when I went to university and I really didn't know what I was doing and what I wanted to do as a career, I went to study business studies. And the first lecture I had in my university course was marketing. And a marketer stood in front and said, you know, here are the four P's of marketing. It's all about that. And I thought to myself, yeah, that's it. That's the thing I want to do. The starting point is the most basic thing is understanding people's needs. Because if you don't do that, you cannot do the rest of what is in the marketing role. So understanding people's needs, kind of understanding their pain points. So who is your audience? What do they need? What do they want? How do they currently meet those needs or not? What alternatives are available to them to meet those needs? What works and what doesn't? Understanding all of that is a kind of fundamental starting point. You know, it's what we had to do with, here's why our tech will work. And this is the need for it in the marketplace and why it's better than the current solutions. You have to do all that first. And then you have to have some sense of scale of what is the size of that problem? And is it a market that's worth going after? Because is it big enough? Can you forecast a future market where this technology will have a role and the size of that is worth the effort you're going to make? Kind of all of those are fundamental things that you would have to sit down and do with any new brand before you've started to say, well, what's our go-to-market strategy? What's the product? What's the packaging? What's the advertising? What's the, you know, none of those things matter until you actually know who's the audience, what's their problem.
And actually, you find with a lot of startups, you'll know this more than me, but they try and figure this out quite a bit. You know, this is where the old pivot comes, doesn't it? Let's take this solution to this market and actually find out that market isn't the right market. It could be a different market or it could be a subsection of the original product. It's not kind of like do it once and you've done it. It can be quite an iterative thing as well, can't it?
I think of proposition development as a moving feast. It is a constant thing. You know, you are always in the process of refining your proposition. The more of that legwork you do up front, the less likely it is that you'll have to find yourself pivoting to something completely different with the same product. You know, if you've really done that upfront work and you do know the market and you do know the need and there is a valuable sized market in there, it's almost like you wouldn't have to pivot because you already know what you need to know. And then when you come into contact with the market, all you're doing is verifying and validating what you think you knew rather than finding out something completely different.
And that is the right way to do it. However, in practice, you find that a lot of tech companies are built by tech people who think, I've got a great idea, let's build the tech. And then they think about the other stuff afterwards, which is where you get a marketeer coming in going, hang on a minute, what are we trying to do here? We're not positioning it in the right way and not targeting the right people. And
technology people themselves or, you know, engineers often get kind of hung up on their own tech in terms of because they think it's great and they've built something that works well and it makes sense to them. It should make sense to everybody else. But of course, that isn't the way that people think. So, you know, one of the core skills I've had to develop over the course of my career is taking the technology speak and what the developers have said and turning it into a language that the audience can understand. You know, you're almost acting as a translator, as a marketer between what's being built and what can be sold.
And Anthropos then, was there an industry already in place or a sector already in place then? Or were you kind of creating the sector in the first place?
No, there's a nascent industry sector here in kind of what I would term now connected care. The prevailing technology in the social care world is what's called telecare. And many people will be familiar with it from looking at older relatives. It's basically a system of having a device, a wearable device or a pendant that you can press if you have a fall, that relays you to a system where somebody can call you and say, are you okay, Mrs. Smith? Have you had a fall? We'll send someone to come and pick you up. That prevailing technology has been in place for 20 years. It's all about reacting to a thing happening. Our tech is actually all about proactive and preventative solutions. So we are looking to stop the thing happening in the first place by understanding behavioral change that is likely to lead to something going wrong. And that's a completely different market. So even at the point that we started 4 or 5 years ago, there were probably 2 or 3 companies doing something like this. There are now something around maybe 14 or 15 who purport to do something like what we do in the space. But it's still really small and really early days.
Good stuff. So when you first joined then, I mean, when we're talking about the fundamentals, we're kind of talking really about proposition development, aren't we? What was your first step? What were the sort of first things that you did then?
Apart from the ones I already kind of said to you, which is, you know, you kind of understand the market and the need and all the rest of it. You then build, or I then built, an initial proposition to take to market to test.
Mm.
And, you know, you can do that with prospective customers or privately with advisors, that kind of thing. I decided that I would also test it with the end market and do it in person.
Mm.
So one of the very first things I did was I presented to my mum and a group of her friends from the WI who were all in their 70s or 80s. This is the toughest audience I've ever had, Matt, and they tore me to pieces. I learned loads. I've continued to do that. I would urge any marketer who wants to understand their market better to be brave enough to go and do the discussions with the potential buyers themselves. Don't have an agency do it for you, or at least don't let them do all of it for you. Do it yourself. Yeah. Because what you want to see is how your words land. You want to see that in the whites of people's eyes, if I say that our product does X and Y because you need that, you need to see people smile and nod along rather than scowl and frown and go, I don't understand what you mean. And so I've been through a constant iterative process with each part of our market, because we're not just selling to one type of buyer, we're selling to multiple types of buyer who then sell on to other types of buyers. So I have ended up kind of creating a series of propositions that are B2B to B2C in most instances. And in each case, having to craft a slightly different version of that language. But in each case, when I've done that, I've started the process off by having those conversations myself, because I want the direct feedback from someone. Often you find if you say to someone, tell me everything that's wrong with this, you get a better set of answers than saying, what do you think of this? But you give them permission to tell you it's wrong, and people will give you much better quality feedback, I think.
Yeah. And when I think of that, I mean, I'm thinking sort of classically that you would do that within, you know, consumer-facing companies, FMCG types of companies, yeah. Unilever and Coca-Cola and all that kind of stuff, where you do get people touching the product, feeling the product, all that kind of stuff. Do you think doing it in your way then is prevalent within B2B then, or do you think that a lot of companies rely too much on anecdotal sort of feedback?
I don't know. My anecdotal feedback is that I'm told we are better at connecting directly to the older people than many of our competitors are, because I've had to continually revise the language and the way I explain it so that a non-technical audience will feel that the technology is there to support them and is not there to spy on them or to listen into their lives.
Mm.
Because the needs of the older person are quite different than the needs of their families, quite different than the needs of a care provider or a care manager or an individual carer, very different than a local authority might be, very different than the NHS and an integrated care board, for instance, might be. But all of those are purchasers and users of our product.
Mm.
And so you have to have a process of being able to talk to every one of those different audiences directly.
Mm. And do you think there's a minimum size of people you'd need to be able to talk to get enough market feedback?
I think you can start with a small group and fill out from that afterwards. I mean, obviously, what you want to try and do is to avoid kind of being held hostage to a viewpoint that you've built from talking to three people and then discover that those three were completely unrepresentative of the market. But part of that you can get from this kind of continuous process of testing out that with somebody else, which is, again, you know, why I'm urging to marketers to say, do it yourself. Don't have other people do that bit for you, because you are responsible for crafting the central messaging. You know, the core part of marketing is communication. Everything will succeed or fail based upon how good the communication is. Probably everything in life fails or succeeds based on how good communication is. So that's your number one thing.
Mm.
You've got to make sure that you're responsible for having crafted every bit of it.
Mm. So once you've done that piece, then how would you sort of sense check it in the market?
You know, I had a whole series of conversations with each of the different types of people in the market. Then we started to go to live events and exhibitions where, again, you get the chance to tell your story 20, 30, 40 times a day. And again, you're kind of crafting it and honing it. And then our go-to-market strategy changed slightly over time from trying to do it all ourselves and selling in each individual market to recognizing that actually there was a series of partners who could support us and then finding the right partner that bought into what you were doing. Quite often in the B2B space, you can have a lot of interesting conversations with people about partnerships that don't go anywhere. So you have to make sure that if you're building a partnership with someone, it is based upon actually having a live, real customer to talk to again about them together. that often is an easier way to get that partnership going. But yeah, so it's crafting it, taking it to market, then taking it to a wider audience, testing it out, finding the people who the message resonates with, getting them to help tweak it for you. I'm talking about a simultaneous process where I'm testing the communications and our understanding what the market wants, alongside feeding back to our engineering team. We need the product to be slightly different. You know, we need it to report in a different way. We need the reporting screens to look different. You know, so in a marketing role, you're a two-way conduit. You're bringing your message to the market, but you're also bringing the message from the market back to your business.
Voice of the customer, isn't it?
Yeah, in marketing terms, voice of the customer, yeah.
Yeah. Is it a case where that proposition's fixed then, or based on what you said earlier, is it, you know, a constant process?
Constant for me. I'm still tweaking and learning every day, almost, you know, I'm 5 years in and I'm still picking up new things in the marketplace, you know, so I'm reacting to changes in the market that are short-term and actions of our competitors, or a specific request from a prospective customer who says, you know, if only you would make it do X rather than Y, or do it in a slightly different way, then I would buy it. And then you work out, you know, is it worth you making those changes and whatever. So yeah, it is a constant iterative process, but actually that's one of the things that makes it exciting.
So we talked a little bit about obviously doing that research at the start, then we've developed the proposition by speaking to the customers. You talked about sort of building the sector, and there are marketeers that are in these sort of roles right now, whether in could be new categories, new industries, new sectors. Once you'd done that kind of work, then what else were you doing? You touched a little bit on the partner side, obviously, but apart from that, what else were you doing to sort of help build the sector overall? I think there's a phrase, isn't it? A riding tide raises all ships or something. So
riding tide floats all boats, yeah. And the easiest way to do that is to get involved in a trade association. So there are trade associations probably for almost every industry and market. So immersing yourself in what a trade group does, in my case, it's called the TSA, the Technology Enabled Care Services Association. They do an excellent job. They're really good at supporting companies in the marketplace. But there were opportunities for me to be involved in market shaping work that they were doing that would have a direct positive effect upon my business. So why wouldn't I do it? I mean, I recognize that some of the work and the effort I put in supports and helps some of my competitors, but my constant mantra with both the trade group and my competitors when I sit down with them is, I want a bigger cake. I don't want to be start arguing over the crumbs. Let's work together and get a bigger cake, and then we'll rise or fall depending upon how good the product is that we've got. At the start, we must find ways to get more people to buy into our sector. And there are enough of my competitors in the marketplace who also share that kind of thinking that we've sat down together and worked collaboratively on quite a few different projects, not least of which has been coming up with a common description, a common nomenclature of what our sector is, how it works, how you describe the products, how you describe the output, so that we all use the same terminology. Because ultimately, in your buying audience, people cannot buy what they don't understand. So if you call something a cup and your competitor calls it a mug and somebody else calls it a tumbler, how does your prospective buyer know, what are they comparing like with like? If you all call it, in our case, connected care platforms, and all of you say the output is an alert or an actionable insight, then you're in a position whereby someone buying go, oh, okay, I understand this space. I know how to compare you to somebody else I'm looking at in this space.
Oh, interesting. And apart from that kind of stuff, would you do things like research into the sector to sort of educate the buyers on stuff? I mean, I guess it's slightly different with you guys.
I still got ongoing research that goes in, still got, you know, kind of regular meetings with users. And, you know, I'm in a startup, Matt, so I'm responsible for all sales and all marketing, but in fact, all commercial activities. So I'm not just crafting the messages. I am responsible for going out and selling it into the marketplace. So I've got an almost daily feedback loop from the market as to what they want and what works, what they will buy, what they understand and what they don't understand.
So you're certainly not struggling with sales and marketing alignment.
It is all aligned, but if it doesn't work, there's only one person responsible for it.
It's you.
I've always preferred that. You know, Anthropos is, I think, my seventh startup. So I've spent almost all my career in and around startups or early phase businesses. I'm probably unemployable in a large corporate. I've only had two goes in large corporates. I much prefer the space of build it for yourself and the excitement of seeing how that grows and develops over time. When you know it's your hands that have molded it, if you like.
Yeah, I hear that so much. So for anyone who's sort of thinking about embarking on something like this then, sort of developing the proposition or refining the proposition then, having done it, what would be your sort of one or two most important bits of advice for them?
I think perhaps three is make sure you absolutely understand and can define and articulate your customer's need or pain is one. Two, make sure that you understand why your solution for fixing that pain or meeting that need is better than anything else that exists. And three, make sure that even if those two things are true, there has to be a big enough addressable market for you to go after to make it worth you going after it. You could know someone's pain, you could know how to fix it, you could have a brilliant solution, but if there aren't enough people who've got that pain, it's not worth you building that. And you end up building a solution that has no market for it. And there are plenty of startups that have done that.
Indeed.
They've built something that there's no need for. So if you don't do those three things in combination, you're kind of lost.
Good stuff. So what's the impact been of the stuff that you've done then? What sort of results do you track? And generally, how have you got on in terms of growth?
So obviously, in any startup, you know, tracking revenue and margin and users is the most easy way of knowing whether what you're doing in marketing works. Because, you know, the two things are hand in hand. And often in many startups, sales and marketing will be one person or just two people working together. Latterly, then you can start to look at other things like, you know, the effectiveness of the social media, the effectiveness of your website, the effectiveness of your campaigns. I run everything through HubSpot, which is a tool that I've used before. I find it incredibly useful. I understand how to use the tool, but I have also employed an outside expert agency in helping me both develop the website in HubSpot and go beyond that. I've hired an agency called Deeply Digital, who I think do a fantastic job for us in kind of hand-holding me through the process. They're my right arm, if you like, while I'm trying to do all the rest of the jobs myself.
Good stuff. So last question then, pivoting slightly then. If you were a founder or a CEO of a B2B tech startup, given your experience then, what would you look for when hiring the company's first ever marketer?
I have been a founder in other startups, but I've always hired myself as the chief marketer. So I guess I'm going to have a very biased answer, Matt, and I'm going to say to you that I would look for someone who understands the marketing fundamentals and is prepared to go and do the job themselves. Someone who's got some experience of being able to show you that they've done that job somewhere else before and done it on little or no budget. Because in most startups, you don't have a massive marketing budget. But the stuff that we started discussing at the start of our call, you know, understanding the needs, all the rest of those things, a really good marketer should be able to do that without any money whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You should be able to do all of that before you then say, okay, in order to support the marketing strategy I've now built, I now need a budget of X to do the following six things, which are, you know, the key elements of the go-to-marketing strategy. But the key thing is, can they do those fundamentals right to start off with? Because everything else can go wrong if you haven't got those things sorted.
A fantastic point at the end. And, you know, I think it's very easy for a lot of marketers to get distracted by the new tools and the new playbook and the new whatever it might be. Nothing works unless those fundamentals are in place.
I'm no different. And having run a consultancy in the past, you know, I advised on lots of that stuff. And when I got here, I discovered that I had to actually set a lot of it aside and go back to basics and say, if I don't get this bit right, the rest of those tools, no matter how flashy they are and how clever they are, the rest of those tools will be meaningless.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of marketeers having a post-it note just saying focus, because it's quite easy to, in your day, just to sort of go down a rabbit hole. And before you know it, you've just lost 2 hours of your time.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Look, Paul, it's been fantastic to talk to you. You know, I found it really useful. And it's a very, very good reminder for a lot of marketeers out there that these fundamentals really, really do matter. And actually, marketeers are privileged in a way to be able to get out there and talk to customers and make a real impact, as you have done at Anthropos. Thanks very much for sharing it.
Yeah, well, thanks for the invite. You know, I would encourage any marketer who wants to really, really, really do proper marketing, go and do it in a startup or an early phase company, because it doesn't get better than a blank sheet of paper and you.
Love it. Nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
So that's it for another episode of the Market Mentors podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please leave a review, as that helps the channel going forward. Until next time.